Thank you, Brian. On Sunday nights, we've been looking at topical lessons that go with particular songs, and so we've had some sermons and song and songs and sermon, and tonight we're going to be singing as our closing song, a song about family. And so tonight, rather than going to a particular text, as I almost always do, I just want to talk topically about this whole subject of family. The family is the nuclear unit of civilization, and it's been said that the family is the cornerstone of society, and as the family goes, so goes the nation, and I believe that's true. I grew up in a good one. I was blessed beyond measure to have the mom and the dad that I had, to have the grandparents that I had. But I am not so naive as to believe that it was this way for everyone. And some of you have absolutely wonderful family memories, just like I do. But I know others of you have painful memories when you think of family. All of us dream of having or being part of the ideal family. In Acts chapter 10, we see a picture there of a family that I would consider an ideal family in many ways. His name was Cornelius. And if you just look at him and take a slice out of his family life, he had a great government job. He was there on behalf of the Roman government, and he was a centurion. And he lived in a beautiful seaside resort right on the Mediterranean, Caesarea. You just think, boy, what a plush place to live. What a great job he had. And more than that, there in Acts chapter 10, verse 2, it describes Cornelius and his family. It says, he and all his family were devout and God-fearing. They would become the first Gentile converts to Christianity. But what a beautiful picture of a family. A loving family, devout family, God-fearing family, a father who prayed regularly, who gave alms to the poor, who cared about people. What a wonderful family to grow up in. Wouldn't it have been interesting to spend a week with Cornelius in his house and sit at their table and just see how he managed to raise kids like that and how he pulled that off? Wouldn't it have been wonderful to go into the home of Joseph and Mary? And somewhere along those early years of Jesus growing up there in the carpenter shop, just to observe them and how they interacted with Jesus and the younger brothers and sisters of Jesus, just to see how they modeled parenthood. What did they do to produce children like they did? I don't know what you think of when you think of the ideal family. I think we all have a picture in mind of what an ideal family consists of. I think, first of all, of an ideal family being a family where Christ is honored, a family where the husband and the wife are deeply in love with one another, where they have obedient, respectful children, where the husband has a good job. Ideally, a lot of people think of the ideal family is where the mom gets to stay home, be with the kids, and the husband can bring in sufficient income to allow for that. A family where they can afford the things that are necessary in life. They live on a nice street and a nice home, and they have cars that run, dependable vehicles. And you know, we can go on and on with this picture of what an ideal family is made of, and that may not be your picture of an ideal family, but I know you have one. We all do. And we all start out in life with this picture, and we want an ideal family. We long for that, but there's often almost a great fixed gulf between what we would like and what we had hoped for and the reality with which life has dealt us what we have. You know, you just wonder. I look at the old sitcoms and the programs that I grew up with and wonder what happened to all the June and Ward Cleavers and the Ozzie and Harriets and whatever happened to, you know, the family of Father knows best. And, you know, those were all presented back in those early days as families in which the ideal was often right there in front of everyone. In the TV families of the 50s, Dad worked and Mom stayed home and she wore her apron and her high heels around the kitchen. And the kids never, ever got into so much trouble that that problem couldn't be solved within a 30-minute episode. And then they all went happily on their way. I know as Vicki has been teaching here in Springfield, and let me just say this. I know when we first moved to Springfield, we were amazed that there were still places like Springfield, Missouri. And this place just seemed so squeaky clean. And it just seemed so ideal. We felt like we'd moved to Disneyland. And everything just seemed so wonderful here in Springfield. And I still believe that in many ways. We are a blessed people. And there's a lot of truth to the old saying that I hear around here. It's a blessing, you know, to be here in the Ozarks. But what is happening across our nation is happening right here in Springfield, Missouri. I checked several recent statistics on what we call the ideal family or what's called statistically the traditional family. And a traditional family is defined like this, where there's a mom and a dad who are married and they have 2.5 kids at home. That's a traditional family. You know how many traditional families there are in our nation? Every year, Vicki would come home and she would tell me in her classroom how many traditional families there were. And every year, the number seemed to shrink. Right now, across our nation, there are less than 20% of all the families, less than 20% in our nation of what we would call traditional families, where there's a mom and a dad and children in an intact family. Satan has declared war on our families. And he has lobbed missile after missile into our living rooms, in our kitchens, in our bedrooms. And it is reflected in the church. We're a mirror of that society. Christians are not immune from the ills of the society in which we live. It's been true in every age. It's no surprise when we study the book of Corinthians and we see that all those Christians that lived in Corinth reflected the culture they lived in for good and for bad. In America, the home is under siege. And there have been a series of timed explosions that have occurred at regular intervals. And we're seeing right now an attack on marriage in our nation that's a fresh attack of Satan. Like bombs going off, they leave their mark and lives are scarred. But there's been no weapon that has done so much to damage the American family as Satan's device called divorce. I can remember, and it's almost shocking to me to think back to those days. I can remember when I was in high school, my grandmother lived just across the street from us. And she was so proud of her family and all the aunts and the uncles and all the cousins and the extended family. And she shouldn't have been doing this, but she did. She bragged about our family and how in all of our family, she said, "I am just so grateful. We've never had a divorce in our family." Well, it wasn't very long before she had to eat those words. I don't know a family today who has not had in some part of their family divorce. Often it's right in the home. I mean, it's up close. Who can say that today? Who can brag about something like that today? The question is not, can we remain untouched by what Satan is doing to our families? Most of us have already felt the blast. Many are wounded and bleeding right here in our midst. The question is, how can we go on? How can we make sense? How can we pick up the pieces? How can we continue to move forward in spite of what's happened within our families? You know, I'm so encouraged by God's Word because God's Word provides encouragement and hope and help in every situation of life, wherever we are. I am grateful for my buddy here at church, Jack Burnham. Jack and Carol are tonight with her family because of the loss of Carol's stepdad. But I am not a fix-it guy. And if something goes even partially wrong, I'm one of those who just throws it in the trash because I can't fix it. But I'm glad I know Jack Burnham, because Jack says, don't throw that away. He says, you can fix that. And he can. And he's fixed a lot of things around my house, and he continues to do so. Things that I have no idea how to fix. But he can salvage things. And he can see possibilities where I can't see anything. And I'm grateful that we serve a God who is like that in our lives. And God sees our families, and there are times when I know folks just want to throw their hands up and throw the towel in. And they say, you know, this is beyond redemption. This is beyond salvaging. How can I ever fix this situation in my family? Well, let me tell you, God is never hopeless. God never throws his hands up. God never throws the towel in. There is always hope that he offers in every family situation. You know, I'm encouraged when I go back and just reflect on the different kinds of families that turned out wonderfully, in spite of being less than traditional families. Now, yeah, we'd all like to have an ideal family. We would all like to come from an ideal family. But there are families that we read about in the Old Testament that wouldn't fit our model of an ideal family at all. If ever there was a successful family, in spite of all their problems, it was Abraham. Did he have troubles? Did he have problems? Yes, he did. He had a problem with lying. He had other issues going on in his family. There was favoritism there in the family. They had a lot of these problems. But for three generations, they produced faithful children. Not completely, not always, but for the most part, faithful children for three generations. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, that family was very different from Donna Reed's family, because they all lived together, Abraham and the whole family, and they had all the kinfolks. They all lived under one tent roof together. Now, some of you grew up in families where you had multi-generational families living together under one roof. Today, that's considered a hardship and a difficulty. And yet, God has used families like that and blessed children tremendously. There's another kind of a family that we read about later on in the Old Testament, a family that had experienced tragedy. They had lost the husband. They had lost two sons. And a new family was forged between a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law, Ruth and Naomi. And they forged a relationship that saw them through tough times to better times to wonderful times as a family. And the story ends with old Naomi holding this little grandbaby on her lap, and the hope for the future is alive. And that hope would include an heir named Jesus Christ. The beautiful words that are used so often at weddings of the love between a husband and a wife were originally spoken between a daughter-in-law and her mother-in-law. Whither thou goest, I will go. Where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God. Where thou diest, I will die, and there I will be buried. Isn't it amazing how God can redeem situations that seem at times absolutely hopeless? God can forge a family even out of in-laws. Isn't that amazing? You know, we read in the New Testament about a family where Jesus loved to stay. In fact, anytime Jesus was in the Jerusalem area during his ministry, he would go to this particular family, and that's where he would always stay. And yet, they were not a traditional family at all. In fact, they were a group of siblings that had continued to live together. Mary and Martha and Lazarus. Those three. Two sisters and a brother. And they were so hospitable. They were so open with their home. And Jesus loved being there with them. He loved that family. You know, all of these were successful family groupings. The traditional structure, as we well know, doesn't always guarantee success. And the reason that you find models of successful families that are not traditional families is because they were homes that were filled with faith and homes that were filled with love. It's been said that families are held together not by heavy chains, but by thousands of tiny threads. when you read through Ephesians chapter 5 and chapter 6 about the relationship of the husband and of the wife and children in the home and all of that, you see what those threads are that hold families together, even non-traditional families together. Between husbands and wives, they're bound by these tiny threads of mutual submission and by respect and by honor. Children are woven into that web by honor and obedience toward their parents. And parents toward their children by training and instruction and nurturing. And to all within the family, that common bond of love that holds families together. These are the threads which can be woven by traditional families and by single parent families and by extended families. No, not everyone is fortunate enough to have an ideal family. But God can work with less than the ideal. Have you learned that yet in life? I hope you have. God can work with less than the ideal. Grace is supplied sufficiently to meet every need and eventuality. With God, there is never a throwaway family or a throwaway situation. God does not abandon people because they've gone through difficulties and because things have happened that cause deep regret and sorrow. God can make a success out of less than the ideal situation. And there is no situation in life that anyone can ever find themselves in that cannot be redeemed by God. I think the thing that I'm most grateful for is that I live today. I live in the age when the church of Jesus Christ is upon this earth, because there we see that huge safety net that is below every family of every sort, our church family. Paul said, you belong to one another. If you're part of the family of God, you belong to one another. I belong to you and you belong to me, and we have mutual responsibilities, and I have to have your back and you have to have my back, and together we're going to make it through life's difficulty. We're told to do good to all men, but especially to the family of believers. If you belong to the church, to the family, you have a whole host of relatives that God has given you. And I'll tell you, through our life, as Vicki and I, as we've lived overseas, we have had spiritual grandparents who have nurtured us and nurtured our children. We have had spiritual parents when we were away from our physical parents who were part of the church and took care of us and helped us and counseled us and advised us and mentored us. And now we've had the blessing of having spiritual children and grandchildren and people that we can care for and mentor and help and bless. And what a blessing it is. Where else do you find a situation like that where family is readily available for every need, every situation that we find ourselves in on? No, families come in all sizes and shapes. And thank God for the grace that we have. In Psalm chapter 68, verse 6, we're told the truth that God sets the lonely in families. Tonight we're going to sing a song in just a moment as an invitation song. And if there's anyone here who needs something that this family can offer, this morning we had two who came and said, family, we need your prayers and we need your help. And we took the time to pray for them. And more than that, if you were here, you saw the line that came down both aisles as people stood in line to show their love with hugs and with words of comfort and with promises to pray. That's what family's about. I mean, how can we make it in this world without family like that? If you're not part of the family of God, we're going to sing an invitation song. And then as we close this evening, we're going to sing a beautiful song that we sing here occasionally. And listen to the words as we sing it. And it talks about what it means to be part of family. And we'll close with that before we all go to our homes. Remember the blessings that we have as part of the family of God. If tonight you need to ask for prayer, if you need to respond in any way, we would invite you to do that now as we sing this invitation song.